Darko Buderitz is with me today. He is going to talk with us about Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra. You know him, musical director for Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra. What a great person he is. Then I've got Halsey Bashiers. He'll talk about state government and his next political move. And a brand new feature, Nancy Dignan is with us with her weather view. You're going to love this. So stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office. And by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com. My friend, once again, on this lovely opportunity to bring you what Tallahassee is talking about this week as best we are able, and appreciate the fact that you make your way to listen in and find out what we've got cooking. And with Darko Buderitz, man, you got a he's just a great guy. You're gonna find out that he's got a lot to say about how we as a culture and as people in this culture appreciate music in a kind of universal way. That is to say that, from his point of view, music is music. And oftentimes we divide ourselves over some of the things about music, I suppose, and maybe about life in general, that aren't real productive and sort of limiting. I mean, frustrating, I think, and frustrating how good life can be for all of us, because we get stuck in thinking about how you and I are different from one another. And Darko Buderitz is here to say, well, when it comes to music, man, there's just the music, and they're known for this. Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra is on record for having performed all kinds of music, and they've got several concerts lined up coming up through the season, through the spring and into the early summer, that will include a pretty, broad selection of pieces, from Beethoven, down to some pop music that they'll do there at Southwood, Pops in the Park, I think they call it. Anyway, we're going to learn about what Darko's been up to lately. He's got this addition to his workload, because now he's not only doing Tallahassee's assignments, he's also the director for the Missoula Symphony Orchestra. He's been there for a while, and recently named music director of the Asheville Symphony. Yeah, so we're going to find out what the heck is going on with him in adding all this to his workload. But by all reports, he's doing it all quite well. He's done some remarkable collaborations, too, that include Renee Fleming, cellist Colin Carr, Robert McDuffie, who's a violinist, and the Oscar-winning actor J.K. Simmons. Yeah, so this guy's the real deal, folks, and we're delighted to have him as our guest, and Tallahassee's blessed to have him as our conductor for Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra. In the second hour, I've got Halsey Bashirs. He'll be with me to talk about what's going on with state government, the new governor. And, you know, he's going to be stepping aside his position as state representative to the People's House here in Florida. So we got some new things coming up ahead. He'll have his perspective on where we are and where we're going and where he's going. And you're going to want to stay tuned for that. Remember that you can always find us online, TallahasseeTalks.com. All of the shows are archived there for you. You can subscribe to the podcast. And you can go to the archive if you want to get in touch with something you missed or go back and listen to something you heard earlier and want to revisit that. It's all there for you, TallahasseeTalks.com, including our brand new feature, My Weather View with Nancy Dignon, longtime weather meteorologist, broadcaster, educator. She is the person you want to talk to, and she's been so remarkably contributive when it comes to severe weather, just keeping us abreast of things. During the Hurricane Michael days, man, she was on it. So she's graciously agreed to come in and be a part of the show on a regular basis. We call it My Weather View with Nancy Dignon. So here she is. Let's take a listen. We'll be back with more.
Hi, I'm Nancy Dignon, and this is my weather view for this week. And I thought, okay, what kind of weather segment should I start? And organically, I thought, how about we talk about what the weather was this week and maybe the review of the weather? So I was thinking what happened, and if you guys remember, on Wednesday, winds were really kicking. And at one point, I believe the Tallahassee Airport was reporting something like 41 mile an hour gusts, and everybody started talking about just how windy it was. And, you know, it's just wind. It was nothing. At that point, we hadn't even had any rain. But then as the winds continued and the skies kind of got a little bit darker, all of a sudden, I was getting hit up on social media. And oh, by the way, on social media, I'm on Twitter, at Nancy Dignon. Also on Facebook, at Nancy Dignon, because I don't use any other name. So I was getting a lot of questions like, Nancy, what's going on with the weather? Why is the wind so fierce? And again, ordinarily, none of this would have mattered. Later on, if you remember Wednesday night, rains came for Tallahassee. It probably started about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and it was pretty heavy for a small window. Let's say it was 3 or 4 hours. And then, of course, it kind of weakened and it moved through. All it was a front. It was a cold front. It was a pretty strong cold front. And as it was coming in, when you get strong fronts, there's a lot of what we call technically isobars. It just kind of indicates really strong winds. So why were we talking about wind? Because I think we're a little weather sensitive. Weather sensitive because and it was only really when you think about it, 3 months ago, we had a hurricane called Michael. And while certainly we weren't going to get a hurricane, but we had something that got our attention. Our attention still, I think, is on the folks in the panhandle, especially in the Mexico Beach, Panama City, Lynn Haven areas, and how much they're still going through. And I'm thinking, we're talking about the wind, and these people are still talking about houses that aren't there. They're still dealing with blue tarps. They're still trying to figure out how they're going to start the recovery, how they're going to get the money, how the rebuilding starts. And then even if they have all that ready, they're waiting for some of the companies, the businesses to come in and kind of help them out. So I think about the fact that in a small window of time, we had wind, we had rain, but we're weather sensitive, which is something that we never would have talked about maybe even as much as 6 months ago. And the other side of this is, Michael was 3 months ago, and we're only 4 months till the beginning of hurricane season. Of course, you guys know that June 1st is the beginning of what we're hoping will be a much quieter hurricane season, but none of those forecasts have come out yet. But it's interesting how one event is really all it takes, and then we become a little more nervous. I have a neighbor across the street. Their house was severely damaged in Hermine. And of course, that was in September of 2016. Tree fell into the house from the top. It's a two-floor home. And at midnight, she called our house asking if my husband was there to go help. And they were out of their house for 6 months. They didn't return until somewhere in April. She can't sleep in the bedroom upstairs. She, when there's wind, when there's, you know, weather that's going a little crazy, must sleep downstairs. And she's a little nervous. So I say this thinking, You're not the only one. If I'm thinking about the weather, I know you guys are thinking about the weather. I walked out from the gym, the wind was almost blowing me over, everybody's thinking about it, but again, we're on the heels of something that severely impacted us. So you're not alone. We have a hurricane season that'll be coming up. It'll probably get our attention and more seriously, because while we used to be complacent and say, oh, nothing ever hits Tallahassee, we've had 3 years in a row where something has hit us. Again, it was just a front. So now what are we dealing with? Some cold weather. We're still in the thick of winter, and I think I'm going to be happy for that. I'm hoping you guys will as well. I like the colder weather. I know most people don't, but it's a nice break from the heat and the humidity. And so this was my first weather in review, my weather view, as they call it. But this was just kind of looking back at what happened and why we were talking about it. And it really was just simply because we had something that's been on our mind, and I think we're all still kind of thinking about the folks in the panhandle. This has been my weather view for this week. I'm Nancy Dignan.
Mardi Gras is March 5th, and Tasty Pastry Bakery is busy baking up their famous New Orleans king cakes just for you. This traditional cake is a coffee cake formed in an oval ring and decorated with brightly colored sugar, purple, green, and gold, to signify justice, faith, and wealth. Baked into each cake, a tiny plastic infant signifies Christ the King. When the cake is sliced, whoever gets the plastic infant in their piece of cake is named King for a day and is supposed to bring a king cake next year. Choose from an assortment of fillings: apple, cherry, blueberry, pineapple, raspberry, strawberry, or cream cheese. Get yours today. Tasty Pastry Bakery, in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Online at tastypastrybakery.com.
Your good old-fashioned bakery. Remember Tasty Pastry.
Call 893-3752.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So for the number of years that he has been celebrated among us, Maestro Darko Buderitz has made his way to our studios more than once. This is now, I think, your third or fourth appearance. Am I right?
Sounds right.
So let me just brag on you.
Please.
A bit. I know
Thank
this
you.
This is embarrassing.
Slightly, I'm blushing.
Do your best. So he's been praised by Westdeutsche Zeitung, a newspaper there that says he's an exceptional combination of passion, elegance, and well-timed pacing, who has established himself as a conductor in demand with orchestras both in Europe and the Americas. And in fact, not only is he currently the director for the Tallahassee Symphony, he is also the music director for Missoula Symphony Orchestra and the Asheville Symphony. I have to say a few more things here. You are also a Grand Prix laureate, a gold medalist of the 4th International... Is that Vakhtang Jordania conducting competition?
That's pretty good.
In Buderitz. competition.
Yeah.
In which Buderitz was invited to conduct orchestras across 4 continents.
Yeah, that was my big start.
You have to have a very long baton if you're stretching across 4 continents. Okay, you can do the rim shot now if you'd like.
Yeah, okay.
Very fun. Yeah, thank
there
you.
There we go.
He was also selected to participate at the Bruno Walter National Conductor Preview, hosted by the League of American Orchestras and the Jacksonville Symphony. So apparently, to be a young, rising conductor of this caliber, you just have to be out there in and have your fingers plugged in to all of these different activities. And right? So I mean, if I'm a young person, let's say, and I'm a student... let's say I'm a student in Florida State University School of Music.
Sure.
And I am in training to be a orchestral conductor. I'm pursuing that as my course of action. Your advice to that young student might be?
Seek out any opportunity you can. It's what I was told when I was young, and sometimes, you know, it was not easy at first. I remember working with youth orchestras, where it was very challenging to make music because, you know, you're dealing with young musicians who don't have basic technical elements under their control. And two good things come out of that. One is that you learn to appreciate patience, which is really important, I think, in any business. But two, also, you build repertoire, and there's an, you know, Brian, there's an unusual thing with orchestras, and that's that in any given piece, so it can be a Beethoven symphony, a Tchaikovsky symphony, doesn't matter. Mm. All the orchestras make the exact same mistakes. Mm. So every piece has pitfalls. And if you just look at a score, those are not necessarily obvious. With experience, they become, you become better at it. Mm-hmm. But when you're young and starting out, having an orchestra that's not so good, like a youth orchestra, a really young youth orchestra. I conducted orchestras with middle school students and, you know, young high school students in it.
Right.
And we would do a piece, something like Bizet Carmen Suite. And the issues that that orchestra had are the same issues that a professional orchestra will have. Except the advantages with the youth orchestra, the mistake is glaringly obvious and you learn how to fix it. And if you skip the step of not working with younger ensembles or less experienced ensembles, it's actually harder to understand when you're in front of, let's say, a fully professional orchestra and something happens and, like, what just went wrong? I heard something go wrong. I heard, for example, an ensemble issue between, I don't know, let's say the tuba and the first violin, but I'm not sure what the root of that problem is. And if there's any luck I've had in my career is that I really, like, I started, like everybody does, low on the ladder, and I really haven't really skipped any rung along the way. And that experience, so for me, it was first, as I mentioned, working with youth orchestras. My first job, actually, first, like, full-time job was working at Northern Arizona University, which is a music education school in Flagstaff, Arizona. A large school, a lot of students, but not a performance school, not students who are going to go play professionally in orchestras. Mm-hmm. There are students who are, you know, learning to acquire skills to become elementary, middle school, high school music teachers or to teach privately. So a lower level of standard in performance. And that also was very illuminating. So here we have an orchestra that's better than a youth orchestra, but still not far from professional, able to do pieces that are more challenging, still having the same issues, again, learning from that experience. Mm-hmm. And I think, to come back to the original question, what do you suggest a young conductor to do is just to seek out experience.
Yeah.
Every conducting book, I remember when I decided to do this, I was 18 years old, every conducting book I read vociferously, you know, technique, what's the pattern like, what do I need to learn about instruments, every book said, there's no substitute for experience. And as a young person, I'm like, ah, please,
yeah, right, sure.
I know everything, No, you don't know anything. It really is, I still to this day, I learn every time I have a concert, I learn something microscopically, but I do. And how your, let's say, mindset, body movement, focus affects performance and sound is really fascinating. It's a fascinating subject.
Yeah.
And truly, experience is the best teacher. Mm. And so I've had great fortune to, number one, to study with some great teachers.
Yeah.
And two, to have plenty of experience along the way to support that.
In the course of what you do now,
yes.
Do you get opportunity to work with students?
Occasionally.
Not as much, maybe.
Occasionally, yeah. Every year I'll have one or two visits with a youth orchestra or high school orchestra. And I mean, I've done that gig. I know what to do. It's inspiring. It's a different energy, right? It's especially when you see the desire in kids' eyes to make great music. That's a different vibe than a professional orchestra has, and so that's inspiring too. But certainly, you know, working with professionals is a different game. Yeah, I've certainly benefited hugely from it, both professionally in terms of learning, but also, let's say, personally in terms of let's say taking care of my health or things like that.
Yeah.
You can hack a lot of things.
Yeah, sure can.
But you can't always hack profession.
Boy.
As much information as it is available, sometimes you simply have to go through the steps.
Right. I know I'm in trouble when I walk into my doctor's office and I start telling him what's wrong with me. I mean, something very wrong with that picture.
Right.
Wait a minute.
Right.
Who's the doctor here?
Right, right.
Folks, we're talking with Maestro Darko Budaritz, and he is here to tell us more about the world of Tallahassee Symphony and all that that means for us here in Tallahassee. So you stay with me. I've got more.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic. You know, something clever. But that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Darko Buderitz, who has become not only, he's not only in love with Tallahassee. I think Tallahassee has fallen in love with him, too. I think there's a kind of mutual kind of love fest thing going on. What do you think? You agree?
Well, I look.
You love us?
I do. And more so.
How much do you love us?
More so in the months of February when I'm escaping from polar vortexes up north.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, seriously. I think like the holy grail of American conducting jobs is having a job somewhere in Florida.
Right? Is that true?
Well, sure, because think about it.
You can escape from?
The season is late September until early May, which means bulk of your year is here when the best weather is.
There you go.
And so just that alone is already
on great. On a weekend when Tallahassee is sporting 30s, so, but that's okay. That's better than minus 47.
Whatever it is, you know, it's like
it's got to be better.
North Pole is warmer than Chicago right now, so I think I'm very happy with like our balmy 34 degrees this morning.
You really have made a name for yourself among us. And I think that, if I can say this, I think you've made a name or expanded the name on behalf of Tallahassee Symphony and on behalf of this community. I mean, across the country and maybe around the world.
Well, look, I think, you know, things like this don't happen as a coincidence. I'm very fortunate. You mentioned why I love Tallahassee. One of the reasons I love Tallahassee, other than just the weather, is the team I work with. You know, we have a great office led by our CEO, Dr. Mandy Stringer. We've had wonderful board members during my 6 years so far in Tallahassee, and it's no surprise to me that we've grown as a result and that our programs have reached out to more people in our community. And that's our approach. We're looking to see, like, how can an orchestra function beyond just, let's say, the concert hall, traditional Masterworks concerts? Because there's so many other opportunities. Things like the Halloween Pops concert we do. Or
I love that, yeah.
The Pops in South.
Where you rise up out of the coffin.
The coffin, yeah. Yes. I had a sneak preview, Brian. It's a little bit disconcerting. Yeah. For listeners who might not know, one of the gags on the Halloween concert, which takes place in Cascades every weekend of Halloween with the Tallahassee Symphony, is, of course, the entire orchestra is in costume, and my character last few years has been Count Darkola. And so
disrespectful, I might say, but okay, fine. You're a good sport.
You know, I got the accent. At least I can do that. Ha, ha, ha. Good evening, my friends.
For this, you get what?
Yeah, and I get a ride candy in a coffin is what I get, you know? So, yeah, we had a little bit of a coming out of the coffin moment down in the park. It was quite humorous.
Funny.
But, yeah, so, you know, the Pops concert in Southwood is another big thing that we do. Certainly our educational concerts, our family concerts that we've done over the years.
You've got a few of those coming up. Let's give Mandy a little credit here for
Absolutely.
Getting this all together.
Absolutely.
I know that she'll appreciate
it.
We got March 30th coming up. Tell us about that concert.
March 30th is a celebration of one of the greatest works ever written, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, the Ode to Joy.
Yes.
And this is a really special project for us because, you know, one of the quirks of the Tallahassee Symphony is we don't have a chorus associated mm-hmm. with the orchestra, mm-hmm. Like some orchestras do. And so when we want to do a big choral repertoire, we have to find ways yep. to make it happen.
And you've got Morehouse College Glee Club.
We have Morehouse College
Glee
Club,
Florida A&M
Concert Choir. And FAMU Concert Choir, yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, both of the groups are dominated by male singers. And it's mm-hmm. a strange thing, at least usually choruses are balanced, let's say 50% ladies, 50% men. Mm-hmm. Because of the Morehouse Glee Club bringing 40 guys on stage, this is going to be a very bottom-heavy choir, which is such a luxury. It's folks, this is like driving a Ferrari.
How Beethovenian yes. of you to
well,
do that.
You know, the thing is in music, balances work best like a pyramid. So yeah. the lower the pitch, yeah. the more you want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's harder to hear in yeah. in a blend, right?
Right.
And when you have 50-50 in a choir, the ladies tend to dominate. But when you have more men than ladies, then you get this like glorious, rich sound. And I'm
wow.
so looking forward to
wow,
working
with it.
That's
very cool.
So
yeah.
that's coming up on March 30th.
March 30th, yep. Ruby Diamond Auditorium. I should say Ruby Diamond Concert Hall, which is now its proper
name.
Then we have April 27th. That's when you're at Southwood, right?
April 27th is Southwood, yeah. This is actually going to be my first ever concert in Southwood.
Cool.
My schedule is a little crazy, having multiple orchestras.
Yeah, yeah.
So far, I've always had a major season-closing concert on the last weekend of April in Montana, and I've never been able to do the Southwood Pops concert.
I see.
And finally, the calendar worked in our favor this year, and I'll be here. I'm really looking forward to that.
Nice.
We're going to program this in the coming week.
And that's April 27th in Southwood Park, Pops in the Park
so
in Southwood. Cool.
Expect both classical music, movie music, Broadway music,
yeah.
and actual pop.
There you go. So yeah. we'll be waltzing and snapping our fingers at the same time.
Absolutely.
So then we have the concert in May, Saturday, May 4th. Now, this is even more intriguing to me
mm-hmm.
because this is a presentation of Holst's The Planets,
yes.
right?
So Holst's Planets is a large work written about 100 years ago.
Hmm.
And Holst was kind of an amateur astrologer.
Okay.
And so he looked at the planets not as, you know, astronomical bodies, but as, let's say, celestial bodies and their associated traits. So Mars is the bringer of war. Venus is the bringer of love. Jupiter is the bringer of jollity, etc. Each planet that existed at the time got a movement and got a character. And so it's a very evocative piece, really powerful piece, and so well orchestrated that it became almost a blueprint for many Hollywood composers to follow when they were looking to explore a certain emotion, feeling in their scores.
Right.
John Williams is kind of the biggest culprit. If you listen to the end of the Mars movement in Planets,
mm-hmm.
it's exactly like the end of the main title in Star Wars, like almost one-to-one, uncannily. So that was the inspiration for the concert. We paired it with music from Vertigo by Bernard Herrmann. And then Eric Korngold, a famous Hollywood composer from the 1940s, who
yeah.
actually wrote a piece for orchestra, a violin concerto. So
wow.
it's,
wow.
In a way, three Hollywood composers, quote-unquote.
Remarkable. And again, that's on May 4th, and that is at Ruby Diamond
that's
Concert
back at
Hall.
Ruby Diamond,
so,
yeah.
Folks, you got lots of good music coming up in the months ahead. With that in mind, when you are able to manage, as you do, your relationships now with these three orchestras, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to make that sort of personal adjustment? Because, after all, these are not the same group of people each time. They have their kind of strengths and weaknesses. You mentioned
mm-hmm.
this earlier. We were talking about the pitfalls that an orchestra can face regardless
mm-hmm.
because of the piece that they're performing, right?
Right.
So with these orchestras, do they have their sort of profile
quirks
that you keep in your mind as you approach them?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I would say like on a very basic level, let's just say three different, completely different halls. So the actual spaces we play in are completely acoustically different. Ruby diamond, incredibly resonant and rich, but as a result, hard to hear from front of stage to back of stage. Thomas Wolfe Auditorium in Asheville, very dry hall. You can hear everything. So immediately the orchestra has to work extra hard to create the illusion of reverb because it doesn't exist. So, for example, here in Ruby, if you play a note, it's, let's say go, pam, it'll go, pam, it'll keep on ringing. In Asheville, it'll be pa. So the player has to go, pa, in order to create this illusion of reverb. Everything has to be played absolutely full value, sometimes beyond that.
And that is really the characteristic that brings that warmth, the depth and all of that sort of thing. The human ear listens for that.
Yeah, the conducting changes entirely. How you approach it, what tempos you take. It can be the same piece of music between two orchestras. I have to conduct it differently.
Wow.
So that alone, that's like one great example.
He is the one, the only director for Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra. Our good friend Darko Buderitz is here. He's going to continue with us in just a moment, so stay with me.
Children are curious and eager learners. Young children learn best when they experience life firsthand in play. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program knows how to spark their innate desire to find out, figure out, and solve problems through the course of everyday events. Their teachers provide the expert guidance children need to capture and extend their natural eagerness to learn. If you want your child to learn and grow in a safe environment that promotes lifelong learning, call FSU Child Care and Learning Program today. Or visit them online at childcare.fsu.edu. FSU Child Care and Learning Program, working together to provide every child with a rich learning environment. Call today. 850-644-7970. Childcare.fsu.edu. 850-644-7970.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Maestro Darko Buderitz. Are there things that you regret? You wish you had done differently.
Oh
thus
my
far.
Goodness! I really want to go with the Frank Sinatra my way. You know,
Are there choices I could have made
that could have been better? Absolutely, like any human being, right?
Sure.
In anything in life,
career choices, though. I mean, would you have gone this way, that way? Now that you look back, or no?
Yes, except at the time it was the best decision, and so I don't regret it.
Yeah,
I don't regret things in the past.
Stay in the moment.
Any decision I face in life, you know, I try to do my very best in making it. So, yeah, I don't dwell on it too much. Some things could have gone better, but I'm really grateful and happy where I am now. In fact, every time before a concert, I have a little ritual backstage. This is like really behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the orchestra musicians know this. When I'm backstage, I kind of take a moment to myself and I have a little ritual. I kiss my cufflinks for good luck. And I give thanks, and I think, you know, thank you for the good, thank you for the bad, thank you for the difficult and the easy, thank you for the beautiful and the ugly, because one does not appreciate one without the other. So maybe it's very, somebody said once, you're very Zoroastrian about this. It's like, I don't know much about it, but I guess if that's the case, I'm happy to take it. And so, you know, when I look back at anything career-wise, you know, there were some difficult moments and there were some wrong choices on my part, but then there were a lot of good things. Yeah. And I'm incredibly grateful where I am.
And it all works together.
Yeah.
Kissing the cufflinks, where does that come from?
Actually, I think I picked it up off of Leonard Bernstein. Apparently, he used to do it. I think I read that once in a book. And I was like, this sounds like a good idea. It's a good, you know, I think it's good for anybody in performance, whether that, and, you know, this is from a musician's perspective, but I think it works. You see it with athletes as well. Everybody's got a little pregame ritual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something that gets you focused, that gets your attention going. And so for me, that's what that, it's this little psychological moment of it's game time.
Mm. If you were to think about adding further to your career,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you started out there in Montana. Then you made Tallahassee part of that.
Yeah.
And now Asheville, right?
Right.
Are you waiting for that next invitation, or are you at a kind of, are you maxed? Or would you consider additional commitments to other organizations.
I think in the performing arts, you always kind of have to have things juggling, always something up. You know, you just kind of, you seek out opportunities. Because again, there's so much competition and the business is really, really fierce. Mm-hmm. You can't rest on your laurels. You always have to work on yourself and improve. And you have to try to see if there are other opportunities that may be available. And then as they come, you know, I always think of it in a way like, are there things I would desire, like work with a big time professional orchestra in a big city? Sure.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm very cognizant of where I've come from and what I've achieved and what I really appreciate. And currently, as far as Tallahassee goes, I really appreciate my musicians. I appreciate the artistry they bring, that they're able to bring, the level we're able to play together, and the beauty we're able to create in Ruby Diamond is really special to me. And I, like, that's one of the most beautiful things that happens to me in life.
Do you feel like we underappreciate the symphony as a community?
No, I don't think so. I mean, could we have more audiences? I think so. And part of that, there is a definite desire in the organization to grow further and to get to a point where we can have more than one concert when we do a program.
Have you seen growth there? Do audiences seem to be growing?
Yeah, and we've served more customers, let's say, or patrons. Let's call everybody that we affect a patron. Mm-hmm. We've had more patrons over the last years than we have in the history of the orchestra. That's fantastic. Is there room to grow? Yes. I mean, what is the population of Tallahassee Wood County? Probably over 300,000?
186,000, Leon County, roughly.
Past the
county,
like, with region.
If you go the metro, you're looking at about 500,000.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think there is room to grow. Our purpose is to bring beautiful music. Like,
wonder
it's,
if there's
it's
a,
such a simple thing.
Well,
you know?
I want in that regard.
Yeah,
it's an excellent point. I wonder if there's a sort of cultural schism in that a lot of those outlying areas are less familiar with symphonic music.
This is not a Tallahassee issue at all. This is a worldwide issue, I would say.
Yeah,
I think part of the problem with part of a challenge with orchestras is that, yes, it does come from this let's say European aristocratic model, right? Mm-hmm. From the 19th century. I mean, that's where it was created. But music itself is for the people, by the people, for the people. I mean, it's like the most democratic thing ever. No composer wrote a piece of music and said this is only meant to be listened by one type of person. I mean, what makes great music great is its ability to connect and relate to human experience across barriers. Take Beethoven's Ninth that we're doing in March 30th.
Yep.
Is there a melody that's more widely known in humanity than that?
Probably not.
I don't know. Maybe I'm sure there's a commercial or something. I don't know. But you know, especially if you take
Flintstones, beat the Flintstones.
If you take pop culture out of it, I mean, really, the reason this resonates is because desire for joy, desire for freedom, for choice, it was a core element of Beethoven's aesthetic in writing this piece of music. When he writes it, he wants to share that with you. Everybody can relate to wanting their life to be filled with joy and with having the freedom to, like, reach for that joy.
Yeah.
And so I come back to the idea. Yes, the history of orchestras is elitist. One should, like, own up and say that. It absolutely is. Mm. But music itself is not.
Yeah,
music,
somebody said to me one time,
music.
If you go to a piano and you hit a B flat.
Right.
Tell me if that's a conservative or a liberal B flat.
Oh, come on, right?
Is that is that a white, black, red, brown? No, it's a B flat.
It's a B flat.
Is it a high income, low income? No, it's a B flat. So in that respect, you're saying music is music, and it really is for the people, and in that capacity, we can easily embrace the music, even if we can't identify with that culture where the music came from. So, I mean,
sure,
I've been and around music all my life, and I'm country classical music, jazz, blues, it all right. works for me.
Right. And come to, I'll give you a funny example. Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
What's Catcher in the Rye got to do with anybody growing up in middle of the Balkans and, you know, let's say 1980s socialist Yugoslavia? Nothing, right? Except it relates entirely to human experience,
right?
Which we all share. And so everybody read Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
It's not that it was, you know, it was not characters that were on our street block, but human emotions, human yeah. desires are universal. And I think music functions exactly the same way.
I think that we have had some of the best conversation that you and I have had to date.
Thank you.
Today.
Likewise.
And I appreciate you very much for taking time, because I know that you don't have a whole lot of time to spend doing this. But what a gracious man, and how good you are to us as a community. Thank you for
Thank you, Brian. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
And please don't ever leave Tallahassee. Even if they hire you away somewhere else, just say tell everybody, well, Tallahassee's really my home. Just say that, okay?
Sounds good.
So we can claim you. Folks, that's what we have for you here at the moment. Darko Budryk, our very beloved symphony orchestra conductor and music director for Tallahassee Symphony, and we wish you very well, sir.
Thank you.
Continue on. Folks, stay with me. I've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Talking about those things in Tallahassee that you are talking about. As best we have opportunity, and in that first hour we have just concluded, we got a chance to talk with Maestro Darko Budryk and all of his work with Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra over the many years that he's been serving in that capacity, and what a delightful soul he is. If you have just joined us, well, I've got more. Halsey Bashirs is going to be with me here shortly. Representative for District 7, the People's House in Florida. 6 years he's been at that post. And as it turns out, that means he's going to term out. So a special election has been called for because he will actually leave his position to take up a new job. The governor has asked him to serve as the Secretary of Business and Professional Regulation here in Florida, and we're going to talk with him about his new role in that capacity and what he leaves behind after 6 years serving in his capacity as representative for District 7. When I ask him about all of the devastation and human toll, the tragedy of Hurricane Michael and all that it has done, those folks are all within his district over there, and just find out what he knows. From all accounts, and you're probably hearing this too, that thing's going to be with us a while, years in recovery. And the load that it has placed locally, if you need your air conditioning fixed or even your car repaired at a body shop or whatever, well, guess what? You may be waiting in line for a while because so much of Tallahassee's, we'll call it labor force, man, whether you're a contractor or a plumber or electrician, you're fighting to keep up with all that has been asked of you in taking care of the rebuilding of several counties over there that have been affected by this. Thousands of people. So, you know, the human toll, the loss of life, food, shelter, just all the natural, normal resources that we rely on, all of that notwithstanding, then comes rebuilding somebody's house, repairing the plumbing and the electrical and the roof and all of that, right? And the cars that were damaged, all the vehicles that were damaged. And man, I tell you, best thing we can do is keep mindful of the demands, keep mindful of the needs. And we're about to launch here in February our Tallahassee Food Challenge, which, as you recall, is part of our effort in wanting to keep us aware of the need. And as we say it, the need is growing. TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com is the place where you can go. And we really pool our resources here for the purposes of keeping you informed. We have, of course, our radio broadcast, Tallahassee Talks, and our radio station, Moose Magnificat, doing that job. And Tallahassee Family Magazine joins us in that effort as a media partner. All of that combined with other media outlets, TV, billboards, radio, social media, all of it. And, of course, the website, TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com. You go there, you can find out more about how to help and what you can give that is most needful. Here's an announcement for you, too. This is a dedication honoring the work of Reverend Steele. So the C.K. Steele Memorial Highway is going to be formally recognized on the 31st of this month. That is a Thursday at 2 p.m. down there at the intersection of Orange Avenue and Monroe Street, to recognize the decades that C.K. Steele committed his life to helping bring about the improvements in civil rights. And he was an active leader in that Tallahassee civil rights movement through the 50s and 60s. So this recognition is coming none too soon, in my opinion. We should have done this a long time ago, but it's being done to recognize his commitment to the quality of life for all of us. All right, my friend. Well, we do have this new feature. I think you're going to like it. And I'm certainly happy to have Nancy Dignon join us. She's going to be part of the regular occurrences around here with her special feature called My Weather View. So let's welcome Nancy Dignon.
Hi, I'm Nancy Dignon, and this is my weather view for this week. And I thought, okay, what kind of weather segment should I start? And organically, I thought, how about we talk about what the weather was this week and maybe the review of the weather? So I was thinking what happened. And if you guys remember, on Wednesday, winds were really kicking. And at one point, I believe the Tallahassee airport was reporting something like 41 mile an hour gusts. And everybody started talking about just how windy it was. And, you know, it's just wind. It was nothing. At that point, we hadn't even had any rain. But then as the winds continued and the skies kind of got a little bit darker, all of a sudden I was getting hit up on social media. And oh, by the way, on social media, I'm on Twitter, at Nancy Dignon. Also on Facebook, at Nancy Dignon, because I don't use any other name. So I was getting a lot of questions like, Nancy, what's going on with the weather? Why is the wind so fierce? And again, ordinarily, none of this would have mattered. Later on, if you remember Wednesday night, rains came for Tallahassee. It probably started about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and it was pretty heavy for a small window. Let's say it was 3 or 4 hours. And then, of course, it kind of weakened and it moved through. All it was a front. It was a cold front. It was a pretty strong cold front. And as it was coming in, when you get strong fronts, there's a lot of what we call technically isobars. It just kind of indicates really strong winds. So why were we talking about wind? Because I think we're a little weather sensitive. Weather sensitive because we, and it was only really when you think about it, 3 months ago, we had a hurricane called Michael. And while certainly we weren't going to get a hurricane, but we had something that got our attention. Our attention still, I think, is on the folks in the panhandle, especially in the Mexico Beach, Panama City, Lynn Haven areas, and how much they're still going through. And I'm thinking, we're talking about the wind, and these people are still talking about houses that aren't there. They're still dealing with blue tarps. They're still trying to figure out how they're going to start the recovery, how they're going to get the money, how the rebuilding starts. And then even if they have all that ready, they're waiting for some of the companies, the businesses to come in and kind of help them out. So I think about the fact that in a small window of time, we had wind, we had rain, but we're weather sensitive, which is something that we never would have talked about maybe even as much as 6 months ago. And the other side of this is Michael was 3 months ago, and we're only 4 months till the beginning of hurricane season. Of course, you guys know that June 1st is the beginning of what we're hoping will be a much quieter hurricane season, but none of those forecasts have come out yet. But it's interesting how one event is really all it takes, and then we become a little more nervous. I have a neighbor across the street. Their house was severely damaged in Hermine. And of course, that was in September of 2016. Tree fell into the house from the top. It's a two-floor home. And at midnight, she called our house asking if my husband was there to go help. And they were out of their house for 6 months. They didn't return until somewhere in April. She can't sleep in the bedroom upstairs. She, when there's wind, when there's, you know, weather that's going a little crazy, must sleep downstairs, and she's a little nervous. So I say this thinking, you're not the only one. If I'm thinking about the weather, I know you guys are thinking about the weather. I walked out from the gym, the wind was almost blowing me over, everybody's thinking about it, but again, we're on the heels of something that severely impacted us. So you're not alone. We have a hurricane season that'll be coming up. It'll probably get our attention and more seriously, because while we used to be complacent and say, oh, nothing ever hits Tallahassee, we've had 3 years in a row where something has hit us. Again, it was just a front. So now what are we dealing with? Some cold weather. We're still in the thick of winter, and I think I'm going to be happy for that. I'm hoping you guys will as well. I like the colder weather. I know most people don't, but it's a nice break from the heat and the humidity. And so this was my first weather in review, my weather view, as they call it. But this was just kind of looking back at what happened and why we were talking about it. And it really was just simply because we had something that's been on our mind. And I think we're all still kind of thinking about the folks in the panhandle. This has been my weather view for this week. I'm Nancy Dignan.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Well, you know what? We have a brand new governor in town, and he has already made himself comfortable, Governor DeSantis, going about the business of the people's business here in our fair city and on behalf of the people of Florida. In his role as governor, he has, of course, the responsibility of appointing individuals for various positions, including the Florida Business and Professional Regulations Secretary. And so it happens that the nod went to our good friend Halsey Bashirs, and we have him with us this morning. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. So good to be here, Brian.
Representative Halsey Bashirs, District 7, has been serving the people of the People's House, we'll say, the people of Florida, in this capacity, and having reached that point at which he was within his last term, he was going to have to find a new job anyway. And I guess you were going down to the post office and looking at the help wanted list and all those kind of things. And then all of a sudden the phone rang, and Governor DeSantis decides to invite you up to the big house. So now you're going to be helping us all better regulate business in Florida. What's that going to be like?
I tell you what, Brian, it is a dream come true to be able to move from the legislature to help all small businesses in the state of Florida. Anybody with a professional business license that's not health-related or law-related essentially runs through the Department of Business.
You have a bit of background here, too, because you've been in and around the business of this department. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the last 4 years, I was fortunate enough to chair the Business and Professions Committee, or Careers and Competitions Committee, it was called, for two different speakers. And under that committee, that purview, DBPR fell. And so seeing all of the industry food fights, everything that they regulated, allowed me to be very familiar with you know, most of their big issues that face them on a daily basis.
Yeah. So when those issues come up, somebody doesn't have to run in from the office next door and hand you a list of, here are the pertinent points.
Right. Here are the talking points. Here's the genesis of it. And so it allows me the ability to be relevant the first day in there, to understand the genesis of a lot of their problems and be able to know the issues moving forward and how we can best help Floridians.
Well, let's talk about that. There are ways in which the economy has done very well for itself, and many credit our prior governor, Rick Scott, for a lot of that growth. Where do you stand on that? Do you think we're heading in the right direction?
I do, and as a result, as you'll see, we've just had Deregathon, which will happen in Orlando, and what we've tried to do was we took all of the business boards and under all of these professional licenses said, hey, how can we make it easier for Floridians to get to work? Mm. Florida is a pretty restrictive state in terms of business licenses or professional licenses, not business licenses, but professional certifications. Mm-hmm. And we want to make it easier for Floridians to get to work. I mean, we don't want to make it harder. And we have some pretty burdensome restrictions on a lot of these licenses. If I can, metaphorically speaking, we're trying to make the door easier to walk through. We're trying to make it wider. Rather than a little 3-foot narrow door only a few people get to walk through, we want everybody to be able to walk through and everybody for that chance to have a job. You know, and it's a great opportunity when people can educate themselves and go out and be in business or start to go work.
Right.
This helps all around. This helps the economy.
So representing District 7 was part of that, I think, rationale in that you had that background. You were, for the number of years serving the panhandle, we'll say. Did that play into the selection? You think the governor looked at that and said, you know what, this guy's in touch. He knows what's going on with people on the ground level, we'll say.
I'd like to think so. I mean, it was, I think, just dealing with that from the rural nature of where we are, trying to help people in general get back to work and dealing with the purview of that agency for 4 years, perhaps weighed into his decision.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, I mean, Florida is largely agrarian. If you think about, you know, we have these concentrated populations around some of the cities. But you get past, even here in North Florida, you get past Leon County and look around. I mean, certainly where you hail from, Jefferson County, it's agricultural, man.
Yeah, don't forget, after tourism, agriculture is the number one, the second industry that keeps this state up.
Indeed.
And when the economy was down, it was agriculture there that was the backbone of what kept this state moving forward. So, you know, it's something to be considered, but unfortunately, Brian, that every generation that moves forward is further and further away from agriculture. It's something that we're going to have to deal with as a state.
Well, in fact, the governor had his critics, of course, who thought that he wasn't regulating enough when it came to the management of water and such. And
that's what he's done. So I think he's looking at all the facts and weighing it all in. So at the end of the day, I know the guy's going to make the right decision. He's going to do what's best for the state of Florida, best for ag, best for all these people. He's just, man, you're not going to find a bigger fan right here, you know?
When we talk about business regulation, it may be a bit early to push you on this question, but where do we need to change? You've talked about opening or widening the door. Are there regulations that really need to be put in place that you think that's an area that's just begging for trouble?
Yeah, and thanks for bringing that up. You know, deregulation, just for the sake of deregulation, is not good. You have to keep the people's health and safety at the first and foremost of the front of it. And also, we don't want businesses taking advantage of people like it's happening over there in the panhandle right now after the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you look past that and say, all right, what is just restrictive? What is where they're protecting their own little fiefdom in their industry? And so some examples. I'm a private pilot. Took me 40 hours to get my pilot's license. Takes an EMT 325 hours to get certified as an EMT. It takes a barber 1,600 hours to get a license. Takes a cosmetologist a little over 1,200 hours to get their license. Now, you know, not taking anything away from those two professions, but let's really balance out here. You know, why is it so much to be a barber versus it is an EMT, someone who deals with medicine, health, blood, and versus a barber who is, they deal with some chemicals and they maintain people's hair, but there's some out of whack stuff here that we really can cut back on. and try and get some people to work that and do the jobs that they want to. There are a lot of people plenty capable, but they just can't afford the education to just go and do that certain profession. And I have a list of them. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on.
Talking about the panhandle, I want to come to that after we get through this break. We have with us Halsey Bashirs. He's been serving the people of Florida as representative for District 7 here, and now serving Florida as its brand new Secretary of Business and Professional Regulation. You stay with me. We'll have more with Secretary Bashirs right after this.
Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. That's the Merry Maid's way of keeping your home or office at its best. And it's what we have come to expect here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Our studios and offices always shine because Merry Maid's makes the difference, like they do for hundreds of offices and homes in Tallahassee. They'll do just the same, just for you. And they're right here, giving back to our community and giving you extra benefits, like saving you up to $400 on your first cleaning by giving you extra service, and saving an extra 10% when you mention Tallahassee Talks. Their website makes it really easy for you, too. You can schedule a cleaning and make a payment with just a few clicks, any day, any time, day or night, when it's convenient for you. Call Merry Maid's this week, 850-386-2205. That's 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Halsey Bashirs. He's the newly appointed Secretary for Florida Business and Professional Regulation, courtesy of our Governor Ron DeSantis. And we were talking a little bit about business regulation and some of the ways in which regulations can get out of whack and sort of indiscriminate, it seems, when it comes to the rationale for why a barber, you said, takes 1,600 hours or something, and a pilot can get his license in 40. And now you've got this deregathon going on. Tell us about deregathon. What is that?
So first of all, when you say deregathon, you have to give a fist pump. And so
okay.
Deregathon was this conference that we had that is going to – we brought all the licensee, all the board together, the professional boards together, and we said, hey, instead of the agency sitting back and looking at areas where we think you need to deregulate, you guys are there in the industry. You're the ones that are representative of it. Why don't you come forward and you come up with ideas on how to deregulate your industry? Where do you say it's prohibitive for y'all to be in business? Where do you think it's harder for you to
so
operate?
So these are the people who are the working professionals coming to the table and saying, this is where we run into trouble. This is why it's so awkward, or whatever the case may be.
This is one of the best ideas I think the governor's had to start with. It is fantastic. And having everybody together in the same room, some really, really great materials produced.
You know, for many years, we've talked about how your beginnings over there in Jefferson County have been a sort of foundation for you. They've, you know, in not just in terms of your own personal life, but a foundation for you professionally and politically. You have this long-standing association with your family's business, Monticello, as a community. We talked a little bit earlier about the impact of Hurricane Michael over there in Panama City area. So when you look at the families, the businesses in, we'll say, Jefferson County and around the Panhandle, what are the things that trouble you most?
You know, I still always worry about a workforce, you know. People want industries to come to our little small rural counties, and the first thing that we hear is, where are we going to get the people to work? So we have to provide, or we have to have a good education system in order to provide for that workforce, whether it's high school, whether it's vocational. You know, we still have to have the people here that can do the work. You know, the second thing is, particularly after this hurricane, you know, is how do we pick up the pieces? And what I've learned is, right after that hurricane, I think I missed 3 days out of the first 21 where I wasn't in the district over there doing what I could to help. Not for the state, just pooling all of my resources and all of my friends and everybody that I knew that wanted to help, just and kind of putting out fires. Hey, we can help here with food. We can help here with gas. We can help here with a house or a tarp or, you know, getting people in and out. And so how do we pick up the pieces after this? And what I've learned is people in North Florida are resilient. they don't want a handout. They just want the opportunity to be able to help themselves.
You know, the days following Hurricane Michael, Allison Tant Richard, she was over there. She was on the phone with me, and she was absolutely stunned. And at one point, she just started crying. I mean, she was on my cell phone. And I said, "What's going on? What's going on?" She said, "Brian, there are people just standing around, 30 and 40 people at a time in vacant lots, and they don't know what to do. They're like zombies. They're in shock because everything is gone. The buildings, the homes, the schools." Jay Bostwick, a good friend with Sperry and Associates, and he called me. He said, "Brian, I've never seen anything this horrid." Now what we're hearing is all of the local contractors, whether you're doing air conditioning work or plumbing, auto repair, they are completely tapped out because there's such a huge hole called the path of Hurricane Michael that we're struggling to keep up with the needs. I mean, how does that affect you?
You know, it'll be a while before we recover.
We're saying 10 years, maybe.
Yeah, and I hope I'm more optimistic than that. I think it's 5 years to 7 years. It's just once the machine gets churned back, when the people come in here, the small businesses that come in that help rebuild, and that's through the construction, the contractors. I'm amazed at some of the businesses back open in Port St. Joe already, you know, the restaurants trying to feed everybody that's there. So if you give them a chance. Human beings are amazing. They're like ants over everywhere, and it's just
working hard.
They're finding a way and they're figuring it out. So.
You know, my concern has been, and it's one of the reasons I keep bringing it up on the show, that out of sight, out of mind. We just stop thinking about the fact that need hasn't yet gone away.
And this legislature, I will tell you, the speaker himself spent a whole day with me. He said, "Halsey, I want to see every single town in your district, all the way through to District 6, if you can ride through there." And we left at 8 in the morning. We got back at about 7 at night. He said, "I wanted to see it firsthand." And he brought the Speaker D behind him, who's probably, if he is elected, he'll be the next speaker. And the guy behind him, you know, who had a chance, and he was on his leadership team. And the reason he did that, he said, "Guys, I want you here. So you know this isn't going away. This isn't a one-year deal, two-year deal. This is a 5 or 10-year deal." And every one of those guys realized that, because if you don't see it personally, you're right. It's out of sight, out of mind. Mm-mm. And those guys, they saw it firsthand what had happened, and they were all just, it takes your breath away.
Yeah.
So they know that, and as a state, as a government, we have to help those people that genuinely need help. And, you know, and let's get the regulations out of the way. Whatever we need to do to help them, let's do that. That doesn't mean a big, fat, open checkbook. That means, hey, if we can help and ease up on the permit process, hammer on the unlicensed contractors, let's protect the Floridians, but let's do everything that we can to make it easier for you to get back.
Right.
Then that's what we're going to do.
Right. In that respect, you think government's doing enough, or are there ways in which you're looking at it both as a legislator and now as Secretary of Professional Regulation? You think, you know, what else could we be doing that would make that recovery faster, smoother, more significant, more meaningful?
I think we have to look at the tax implications that some of these small cities are facing because their revenues are down and that cuts back on their services. That's something that we're going to have to deal with perhaps as a state and either prop them up in the interim or we have to find a way financially to save them if we can. And I don't know if save isn't the right word, but you know,
are there provisions already in place within the way in which Florida law works that?
No, there are not. There's nothing in place. So that's something that's coming to the forefront pretty quick. I'll tell you, another thing we can do is that they've done with the cleanup stuff, and that's a huge burden that lifts off the counties. The governor just announced that. The FEMA picked up the tab for 45 days. You know, that's several hundred million dollars it saves those small counties. And up here, you know, I always say, you've heard me joke, the North Florida, South Florida dollar factor, it doesn't spend well in our favor, you know.
Right.
So that's the world to them up there, a couple hundred million bucks.
Sure.
So I think all these little things are going to keep adding up.
We were at a car dealership having the car serviced, and this woman sat down next to us, and she looked horrible. She just looked woefully depressed, and we struck up a conversation, my wife and I. Turned out that she had an 800-acre farm around the Chipley area, and she had just come back, and she's there getting her car serviced because she's trying to find out how much damage was done to her vehicle as she's trying to drive into where her farm used to be. She said, we had pecans, peanuts, cotton. It's all gone. It's devastating to think how a person, and this is a family, she said, we go back several generations that we've had this farm in our family, and it's gone. That made for Annette and I, that made this very real.
Yeah, I tell you, the one thing that people really, a little bit of it's been talked about, but not a lot, and this has changed the landscape physically and financially, is the timber industry. When you take 1 million acres worth of product out of the industry, and there's not enough need for that product immediately, if everything was perfect for another year, there's not enough need for it. That changes for the next 20 to 30 years how North Florida operates. That changes the loggers, that changes the cruising companies, that changes everything to do with that industry, the pulp, the market, the fiber, the chip and saw, the wood. All of that's gone, and that's not an annual crop. No, that's a 20 to 30 year cycle. That's very real in terms of how we're going to deal with that moving forward.
Well, folks, just one of the cheery topics that we're considering here as we congratulate our friend Halsey Bashiers on this new appointment. He'll be serving Florida as its new Secretary of Business and Professional Regulations. I've got him for a few more minutes, so stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Children are curious and eager learners. Young children learn best when they experience life firsthand in play. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program knows how to spark their innate desire to find out, figure out, and solve problems through the course of everyday events. Their teachers provide the expert guidance children need to capture and extend their natural eagerness to learn. If you want your child to learn and grow in a safe environment that promotes lifelong learning, call FSU Child Care and Learning Program today. Or visit them online at childcare.fsu.edu. FSU Child Care and Learning Program, working together to provide every child with a rich learning environment. Call today, 850-644-7970. childcare.fsu.edu. 850-644-7970.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The primary election, for your information, folks, is April the 9th, and then the general election, the deciding vote, will be cast June the 18th. So with that in mind, you haven't finished up all your homework, have you? Still got stuff to do over there.
Yeah, I tell you what,
work is never done.
That's right. I'll be honest, the hardest part about accepting the job was leaving the position early, because House District 7, I think, is, you know, it's my hometown, it's where I'm from, and so leaving them hanging, it bothered me.
Especially in the wake of.
Yeah, especially in the wake of the hurricane. So thinking that through, I had somebody from Madison that called me or sent me a message the other day. He's like, hey, we're going to be unrepresented during this entire time of session. Mm-hmm. And they said, Halsey, you know, what can you do to help? And I wrote her back a message. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, don't worry about that. I am staying with you all the way through until the general. I will make sure that there's representation. Even though I'm not officially in the seat, we're doing everything we can to still help. The staff is still on, and we're filing appropriations bills and trying to help where we can to represent HD7. I just don't want to leave them behind.
Yeah,
that was too important to me, you know. And now moving forward, and it makes for a lot of work, right?
Sure.
Got to do the department stuff and got to continue to help
HD7.
You're
double timing it, man.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. But I'm not complaining at all. It's a tremendous privilege for both.
Do you have to punch in and out? Like, do you have a clock where you... You can file for overtime? No,
I mean, I only work half days, which is 12 hours a day, so that's pretty good, you know?
That's right, half of 24.
That's right.
So the needs of people in District 7, and you alluded to this a bit earlier, talking about North Florida, South Florida, when it comes to funding issues. A lot of times I think about the region here, and of course for me, Tallahassee is really five counties, and I don't think of it as a few zip codes. And maybe for you, it's even more than that. Maybe it's more like 10 counties.
Yeah.
So how are the people, let's say, in Jefferson County considerably different than, or needs maybe different than those in Leon County?
Well, I mean, remember the eastern part of the district is still real agriculture in nature. Well, the whole area is really agriculture in nature. Mm-hmm. But particularly this year, it's different because Madison, Jefferson, Lafayette, Taylor, they don't have the needs that Calhoun, Liberty, Gulf, Franklin do because of the hurricane. Mm-hmm. So completely different. Wakulla is kind of in the middle, remember. And so it's trying to find that right balance, what everybody needs. They all still need that infrastructure support. By mm-hmm. that, I mean water lines, main lines, sewer lines, to help get their cities, make them able to expand and grow to meet the needs of the future where businesses come in. You have to have infrastructure like cable or, you know, internet and the utilities.
I made note of the fact that our newly elected mayor went out of his way to invite the governor, or I guess it was the other way around. He wanted to meet the chief of staff over there. What do you know about that?
The mayor. I mean, look, he's doing the right thing. I got a chance to be at an event with him the other day, and he said, man, I'd love to. He wants to reach out. And he goes, they're new in town. I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat. And mm-hmm. I think Mayor Daley's another one that he recognizes that. We're all in this together. We're all rowing in the same direction. We want good things for our people and for our towns.
Yeah.
We got to find a way to get along.
You know, back during the election last year, and we were looking at city commission positions and had all of them on the show at one point or another. Jeremy Matlow comes to us as a sort of self-described progressive, and his viewpoints regarding the improvements needed. His theme was, we are one Tallahassee. Now, he came at it from the standpoint that he grew up in poverty, you know, growing up on the south side of Tallahassee. We're in many neighborhoods down there, they still don't have sidewalks. So he had a very interesting sort of take on that. And when I questioned him about his politics, the conversation really turned toward meeting needs. You know, and his comment was, you know, at this level, does it really matter, you know, what button you're wearing? It really matters whether or not you're committed to seeing the game played on the field the way it's to be played, where everybody wins.
Yeah.
So it's less about the scoreboard and more about those things that people are have in common, that we share equally and are concerned for. The thing that I find most troubling at times is how we can find that. You know, we decide that, well, we're the real Tallahassee over here and you're not. Or those people over there, well, you know, we're not part of them. And I think that hurts us. I think that holds us back. I think Jeremy was one of those people who said, and Mayor Daley, I think, is aligned with that. Man, we're really all the same cloth here, aren't we?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. Again, the bipartisan stuff is killing this country. It really is. You know, at the end of the day, how many times have I said it? Let's help the people that genuinely need help. Doesn't matter what political affiliation they are. Let's do what's best for the state overall, the city overall, our counties, our districts. And those needs are different across the state. Recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
And we recognize that there's a finite amount of resources to deal with it. But at the end of the day, we all want what's best for Florida.
In the course of taking your new position now as Secretary of Business and Professional Regulation, what's the protocol? What do you have to do to make sure that you're ready to assume that position? What goes on between now and then, and I guess prepping you for all that will be facing you as the secretary?
Well, I mean, again, having DBPR under my purview, being chairing that committee, allowed me
Long
to be
time.
Ready day one. So I think that the real thing is, you know, which way is the agency? How do how do we deal with a brand new guy coming into an agency that he knows a little bit? And so I'm preparing our team, and we just want to move forward and help small businesses. We want to help the people that are out there helping themselves. We want to make it easier for them to operate, but recognize the bad actors, you know, we're not going to cut them any slack. Shame on you once is my rule. Shame on me twice.
Where will you be housed? Where will the offices actually be located?
The office is over on Blairstone on the Appalachia Parkway. Yeah. It's 2601 Blairstone. Mm. They moved over there a couple years ago after moving out of the Northwood Mall.
So. Well, that was my next question as to whether or not you've bothered to check the ceiling just to make sure that we don't have any
ceilings are good, everything's good, building's good, that's right.
Nothing of that kind. Okay.
Yep. No, well, no need to worry about all that stuff in the past.
Just thinking of your lungs. Yep. That's all.
I appreciate that.
Don't want any black mold, you know, killing you.
Still trying to find my way around and walk into a, you know, the right office and not walk into a closet or a bathroom. It's a big building.
Big building.
But all the people over there have been so nice, so genuine. I mean, everybody speaks.
Well, that's because you're a nice guy.
Ah.
Representative Halsey Bashir's representing the people of Florida District 7 for the last six. He's on his way towards a new position here as our Secretary of Business and Professional Regulation, courtesy of the governor and his appointment. We wish you very, very much success.
Thank you,
well,
Brian.
Sir. You're looking well.
Thank you, sir.
We haven't gotten the best of you yet.
No, man, it's so good to be here.
Jefferson County boys, you're hard to keep down.
That's right. You can keep us out of the country, but you can't get the country out of us.
That's the way it goes. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good seeing you again, my friend.
And thank you for tuning in, my friends. We're glad that we had the opportunity to talk with Representative Bashir's on this occasion. We look forward to having you back again next week. We are the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat. You'll find us online, moosemagnificat.com, Tallahassee's radio to the world, bringing you all local musicians playing their original songs. That is Moose Magnificat, the sound of Tallahassee. Well, that's cool stuff. I'll be looking for you again next week. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me. Mardi Gras is March 5th, and Tasty Pastry Bakery is busy baking up their famous New Orleans king cakes just for you. This traditional cake is a coffee cake formed in an oval ring and decorated with brightly colored sugar, purple, green, and gold, to signify justice, faith, and wealth. Baked into each cake, a tiny plastic infant signifies Christ the King. When the cake is sliced, whoever gets the plastic infant in their piece of cake is named King for a day and is supposed to bring a king cake next year. Choose from an assortment of fillings: apple, cherry, blueberry, pineapple, raspberry, strawberry, or cream cheese. Get yours today. Tasty Pastry Bakery in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Online at tastypastrybakery.com.
Your good old-fashioned bakery. Remember Tasty Pastry.
Call 893-3752.